That was the year, recreating notable events of passing time, reviving memories of men and women who have contributed to the history of a modern world. That was the year. Dublin, Ireland, January 16. Young Michael Collins, not yet 30 years old, stands just within the gates of Dublin Castle, his usual smiling face clouded in deep thought. By his side is his ever faithful bodyguard and companion, Joe Riley.
And what might be troubling you, Mick?
Oh, Joe, I've been thinking.
And what about? Nothing that your brow should be all furrowed. Why, Mick, me boy, you're the greatest man in all Ireland this day. You should be laughing and shouting with joy, just the same as your hundreds of friends outside the gates there.
Yes, I suppose I should. Just think, Joe. A year ago, the British government had a price on me head. They were offering £1,000 sterling to get me into that castle. Today, I walk in of my own accord. The Tommies are tearing down the barricades. I'm a free man, the head of the Irish Provisional Government.
Aye, that you are, lad. Well, then.
Oh, what I was thinking about, huh?
Aye.
I was thinking, Joe, about all the men who've died within these very walls for Ireland. Hugh O'Neill, Robert Emmett, Wolfe Tone.
May the saints rest their souls.
Year ago, Joe, the British had had their way. I would have joined those Irish martyrs. Oh, well. Let's go on out and see the people.
With a smile, Mick.
All right, Joe. With a smile.
7 months later, after considerable difficulty with the opposing political party, Michael Collins, accompanied by a powerfully armed guard, was driving toward Cork after inspecting the National Army posts of Skibbereen, Roscommon, and Clonakilty. As they traversed a narrow, rutted road only 20 miles from their destination...
Look, Mick!
Eh? What is it?
The dispatch rider stopped. Something's up. We're ambushed.
Get after the men. We can lick them.
Nick, stay in the car. Don't sit
down. No, don't. Don't get out.
It's you, sir.
Come back, Nick.
No, don't. You're going to be dead.
Well, Mick, I think we beat them off.
Yes. Oh, why can't I...
Mick! Mick! Mick, they've killed you.
Forgive them. Forgive them.
Oh, Mick. They've killed you. They've killed you.
And Michael Collins joined Hugh O'Neill, Robert Emmett, Wolfe Tone... Another motto to Ireland's hectic history.
1922. That was the year.
After witnessing the closing, prayerful moments of the Washington Disarmament Conference, the signing of five treaties and the conclusion of a five-power armament agreement, said U.S. President Warren G. Harding,
"It may be that the naval holiday here contracted will expire with the treaty, but I do not believe it. Those of us who live another decade are more likely to witness a growth of public opinion strengthened by the new experience, which will make nations more concerned with living to the fulfillment of God's high intent than with the genius of warfare and destruction."
World powers signing the treaties were
the United States, Great Britain, Japan, France, and Italy.
1922, that was the year.
Anywhere in the U.S. at any time.
Maybe they've been knocked over.
Yeah?
Are you Bill?
What if I am?
This is the 101 Club, ain't it?
What if it is?
Eddie sent me.
You got a card?
Well, no, but
You gotta have a membership card. This is an exclusive joint. Now beat it.
Oh, shucks.
One day in a speakeasy near a Brooklyn, New York car barn, a streetcar conductor approaches the bartender.
Say, big boy, give me a lot of change for this five, will you? You gotta have it for my run.
Change? Oh, sure, buddy. But the best way to get change is to buy a drink.
Oh, yeah? Okay, give me a glass of beer.
A glass of beer? Oh, come on, buddy. Get in a swing. Buy a real drink.
Okay. Give me a shot of whiskey.
Now you're talking. Here you are.
Here's the $5.
Yeah. Well, here's your change. 4 bits for the drink. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And quarters.
All right, big boy, come on. This is a pinch.
Thus were the problems of prohibition enforcement handled in the middle 20s.
1922. That was the year.
The White House, Washington, D.C., September 19.
I am hereby returning House Bill number 10874, bearing my veto. When the bonus was under consideration in the House, I expressed the conviction that any grant of bonus ought to provide the means of paying it, and I was unable to suggest any other than that of a general sales tax. Such a plan was unacceptable to the Congress, and the bill has been enacted without even suggesting a means of meeting the cost.
This was the message of President Harding as he returned the soldiers' bonus bill with the executive veto. The next day in the House of Representatives.
On the bill to provide adjusted compensation for the veterans of the World War. This body has voted to override the president's veto by a ballot of 258-254.
Later the same day in the Senate.
The Senate has voted to sustain the president's veto on House Bill number 10874 by a ballot of 44-28.
No.
And once more, the bitter contest of the soldiers' bonus was reinterred in the graveyard of lost legislation.
1922. That was the year
that America's greatest architectural work was dedicated at the nation's capital, the Lincoln Memorial.
That was the year
that the King of Italy summoned Benito Mussolini to form a new government, marking the beginnings of a long fascist regime.
That was the year
that a 26-inch January snow caved in the roof of the Knickerbocker Theater in Washington, D.C., killing 98 persons.
That was the year
that the four horsemen of Notre Dame, Miller, Stuldreyer, Crowley, and Layden, rode to gridiron fame.
That was the year
that the Italian-built U.S. Army dirigible airship Roma exploded over Hampton, Virginia, killing 34. On November 29, 1919, a federal grand jury at Grand Rapids, Michigan, indicted Truman H. Newberry and 133 others under the Michigan Corrupt Practices Act, which set a limit of $3,750 as the amount a candidate could spend upon his election. It was charged that Newberry's friends, in their successful campaign to defeat Henry Ford for the U.S. Senate, had spent considerably more than the law allowed. In the trial, Newberry and 16 others were found guilty, sentenced to jail or to pay fines. After the trial, remarked Chief Defense Counsel Martin W. Littleton,
"No man will serve one day in jail or pay a dollar fine."
Time in the U.S. Supreme Court proved Littleton's statement correct. with that highest judicial body declared the Michigan Corrupt Practices Act unconstitutional.
Washington, D.C., January 12, 1922.
By a vote of 46 to 41, the U.S. Senate this day decided to seat Truman H. Newberry as senator from Michigan.
Detroit, Michigan, November 17, 1922.
Honorable Calvin Coolidge, the Vice President, Washington, D.C. Dear Mr. President, I enclose herewith a copy of my resignation, which I have this day forwarded to the governor of the state of Michigan, and I respectfully request that this be read into the records of the Senate as soon as possible. In terminating my service as senator, I beg to express once more to you my deep sense of thankfulness for your many courtesies and friendly consideration. Yours respectfully, Truman H. Newberry.
1922, that was the year
that there first appeared upon the music counters of the world the successful product of the pop music market.
Thank you.